My biggest oh shit moment is because of Steven. I'm chasing Steven around NJMP. There's this one left-hander, and I'm ringing out fourth gear on the rev limiter, hit the brakes hard, drop it down into third gear, and I start to turn left, and I missed the apex. And my tires went off the edge, and there's a dip. The car starts to spin, and I must have stopped like 4 inches before the tire wall. And I'm like, I'm done. The session's done. Like, I almost put my car on the wall.
Take your pants.
Yeah, I need to. Just definitely a little poo came out, you know?
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Race podcast. I'm Frankie Five, and we're here at the New York Auto Show, checking out the R2 Expo. And today we got a special guest, a few special guests with us today. We got Raul, we got Chris, and we got Steve. Thanks, guys, for joining the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you so much, man.
Awesome to be here.
You know, I don't think anybody, and personally, I got to know you for 5-10 minutes before this, but I don't think everyone out there knows what you guys do. And this is kind of a new conversation for myself with Time Attack, road racing, grid life.
Yeah.
That's what
yeah.
you guys do.
Hell yeah.
Let's hear from you guys. Raul, how did you get into this?
Man, let's go back to 2015. I met Steven. And prior to that, I was doing autocross in my automatic Subaru. And I was doing autocross. I was like, man, this car is fun, automatic. And then I was like, let me get a 5-speed. Did a 5-speed. By the way, it was still a 2.5 naturally aspirated. It comes in every grandmother's fucking Forester. And it was fun. Then I was like, oh shit, I gotta get a turbo. I gotta go fast. So I did a WRX swap. And it's been fun ever since. Like, and then it evolves STI this and. And then I met Steven. He's like, oh, you want to do like real big boy stuff? And I was like, I guess. And then he introduced me to Chris and we all started fucking racing.
So why the Subaru? Why the Subaru platform for you?
So when I got out of high school, my uncle gave me his 2.5 RS that he bought brand new. I crashed it. And then I ended up getting this as kind of like a revamp. And it just evolved from there. Like, it was my daily driver. I was supposed to just go back and forth to work with it. And it just evolved. It's like a drug.
Is that the 141 mile commute that you had to do with this
one?
No,
at that time I was like 22, working at the dealership. I'm a mechanic by trade. And I was working at the dealership. I needed just a car to go back and forth to work. But and then autocross came into play. And okay, a good autocrosser makes a good road race. The transition is great. So, it's been amazing. Just being here is awesome.
That's cool. Chris, how did you get in?
Oh, man, this is a funny story. My uncle had an old Corvette, like a Stingray Gold, and he took me for a ride in it. And I'll never forget, like, that initial push into the seat when he launched it from a red light. And ever since then, I was hooked. And I tried to get an RX-7 as a first car. My mom shot it down. She said I'd end up killing myself. She's probably right. She wanted me to get something with four doors. So I actually time attack a 97 Civic sedan. Right? That was one of my first cars, and I've taken it through every stage from there. I had like some carbon fiber bucket seats, like a Momo steering wheel, some Enkies and some decent suspension. And where I was working, there was this older gentleman and he had a Porsche. He was part of the Porsche Club of America. And he looked at my car one day. He's like, Chris, he goes, you ever, what do you do with your car? I was like, oh, I just, you know, I take it to like shows here or there. At the time I was going to like Honda Day and, you know, Baker's Meet back in Queens, back in that time. And he's like, dude, he goes, come out to Tobey Beach in Long Island on Sunday. I was like, all right, cool. What time? It was like 7 o'clock. I was like, that's early, man. I was like, I was maybe 22 years old, 23 years old. And he was like, yeah, come out. He goes, you'll have a good time. I was like, what? Am I going to see like other Porsches? He's like, just show up, make sure your car is good, and I'll take care of everything else. So I show up and it was an autocross. The old man paid for my entry fee. My helmet was my instructor for the day. And it was a slippery slope ever since. Like, it went from a full interior car to, you know, maybe I'll take the back seats out because I had a single cam at the time, non-VTEC. And I was like, I wanted to get as fast as I could. Like, I was competing pretty well with the car that I had with very, very minimal upgrades.
So, Chris, you said 97 Civic.
Yeah.
Is that the car in the car show? Is that the car from 1997?
Yeah, that is the car that I have now. It's a 1997. It's actually at the Liquid Moly display right now. I've had that car since 2010. Yeah. Yep.
I've had that car 14 years. I actually looked at it. It's very clean.
Thank you. I try, man. It's not easy.
How many years is that? 13 years?
Yeah, going on 14 July. This July is 14.
That's crazy.
Yeah, my friends make fun of me because we'll be at the track day. And I'll literally take my wheels off at the end of the day. When I rotate them, I'll clean the barrels. I'll clean everything. Clean the wheel wells. Do like waterless wash on the car so it's clean for the next day. Like,
that's serious.
We rag on him all the time.
They do.
That's serious.
Yeah, like everyone's eating and drinking.
I just leave it in the garage and go to sleep.
Everyone's eating and drinking, and I'm there wiping my car down.
Damn.
And but then at the same time, like everyone's like, "Yo, how do you keep your car so clean?" And I'm like, "That's how. Like that's it. Like I like a clean car. Like a clean car is a good working car. Like I know I've got no leaks. You know, I know I have. You know, the car's operating at 100% because there's nothing to indicate otherwise, because it's so clean.
You know, in my head, when you say you love clean cars, I just like can't think of clean cars and road racing in the same sentence.
It's tough. It's not easy. The amount of rock chips I get on the car is insane. It's a white car, so the rubber that gets tossed up, if I'm following Steven or Raul, is insane, right? Like, you know, tires are made to degrade.
Yeah, yeah.
And what happens is the tire, as it gets hotter, little chunks of rubber come off of it, and it flies off the car in front of you, hits your car. I end up with marks all over the car, and there I am in the middle of the night. You know, track day's done for the day. We start again the next morning, and I'm wiping down with track spray to take the rubber off and then to get it all done the next day.
That's crazy.
I like to have a nice, clean,
good-looking
car.
Yeah, I tip my hat
car.
Off to you for that.
Thanks, bro.
After every session, he's, like, wiping his car down. I was like, God damn, Chris. Meanwhile, I'm checking my oil, making sure my...
That's dedication right
there. I mean, I do
right
that
there.
Stuff, yeah. too, but, like, in the little in-betweens, I'll wipe the car down.
All right, Steven, you're up. What got you into it?
Well, unfortunately, I'm blessed with a family that's been into racing for years. Shout out to Uncle Terry. He's actually my stepdad. He got me into it. He used to track a silver LS Integra back in the day. They called him the Silver Bullet. So we'd track with him when I was younger. His sons grew up and they start building cars themselves. He had two EK hatchbacks. One was a black one he owns now. Another one is actually my car that his son used to drive. They had a B20 VTEC back in like 07, 08 time. That engine blew up. I was coming of age. I turned 16, 17. And I'm like, hey, I need a car. And then my mom was like, why don't you use that one outside? And I'm like, at the time, I was a big Silvia guy. I love Silvias. I love S14s. And I'm like, I don't know, a Honda, we'll see. Ended up building it with Uncle Terry over the course of a winter. We bonded really close. Went from a street car to a race car, back to a street car that I drove to high school at 17 years old with my junior's license. My mom, well, I'm Guyanese, she's very strict. Junior's license, you had to be home at 9 o'clock. I'd get a text, 8:55, where are you? And I'd be like, I'm around the block. I'm coming home right now. She's like, if you're not home by 9, I'm taking the car away. Because she used to pay the insurance, you know, like, you know, she's gracious enough to do that. When I turned 17, we used to track with the organization called Emma Racing. I signed up for my first track day at a NJMP Lightning. My mom had to sign a waiver. I was underage. I threw some slicks on the car. Sent it. Obviously, I didn't win anything, but I started really young at 17. It's been the same chassis since 2012. Granted, I've crashed it a few times. I've crashed it twice on track. Once doing stupid stuff on the highway as a kid. Like, you know, we all do stupid stuff as kids. But I'm real big on consistency. I love the chassis. I have a lot of sentimental value, like Chris, to the chassis. So even if I do crash it or ruin it, that's why it looks a little rough on the outside. You know, it's a full track car for the past 7 years, you know, went from, again, track to street to track again. So yeah, just been building it. I don't think I'll go to a new chassis anytime soon. It's just something I'm in love with.
Wow. So like, I guess this happens wherever you live, but specifically for us, we all live in the New York, New Jersey area. Like, it's not like you could say, hey, I'm going to take this weekend. I'm just going to go drive 5 hours to this track. Like, you know, you just don't have that accessibility, right? So what do you guys do? And let's start with you, Steven. Like, what do you do to keep yourself up to date, making sure you're prepared for racing? Like, what are things that you do since you don't go to I'm assuming you don't go to the track every weekend.
So I'll start from when the car was a street car, because what I do now is completely different from when I used to street drive uh-huh. the car. So it'll be a street car, drive on the street, high school, college, my first jobs, first dates, whatever it is, right? A lot of people think the ceiling is really high to get into this kind of racing.
Yep.
The basis is you just have to have the car in a structurally sound state. Good wheel bearings, good brakes, good tires. Your brakes work, your tires work, your tie rods are good. The car is solid in terms of a driving vehicle. Then you kind of just, if you want to get tires, you have enough money to get tires, you'll throw in some tires in the trunk. You know, if you have a friend with a truck, you'd be like, hey, you know, I'll throw some tires in the back of my truck and, you know, take it to the track. And you just start that way. You start really small. Believe it or not, like all three of us started honestly with nothing. We drive the cars to the track and back. Stock motors.
Yep.
Motors the last thing you want to build.
I agree.
Even now, the name of the game is reliability. So if the car's not reliable, you're not turning laps, you're paying an entry fee, you're spending 2-3 hours one way to drive to the track and back. You're wasting time, money, energy with a built motor. So believe it or not, I started with a stock B16B. I believe Chris started with a single cam.
Mm-hmm.
Raul started with a single cam 2.5.
Yeah, 2.5 Forester motor, yeah.
Although slow, extremely reliable.
Yes.
And that's what you need.
Like, it's turnkey and go.
You need the laps under your belt is the first thing. When you get to like, I don't want to say we're up there, but we've been in the game long enough that our cars have just evolved to a certain point that now things are different. Now we need the built motors. Now we need the built trans. We need the built driveline to actually be competitive. You know, we have guys showing up with MK5 Supras with just an aero kit, tires, and suspension doing the same lap times as our golden era Hondas, golden era Subarus.
That so, B58, man.
The name of the game is different for us K-Swap, now bro. Yeah. Because of the where we're at. But if anyone wants to get on track, first thing is reliability. And a structurally sound car.
How about you, Chris? How do you prepare, get ready?
I mean, it's going to piggyback off of what he said. Like, I didn't have a lot to start with. I was a kid in college. I paid for my own college. And I did it out of my own pocket, right? Like, sponsors are insane to get. It's super tough to get those for Time Attack or road racing. But yeah, I started with a single cam non-VTEC D17 engine with the catalytic converter still on it, drum brakes in the back, small disc brakes up front. You don't need a lot. It doesn't take much. If you have a good running car, a car that, like Steven says, doesn't leak, is structurally sound, good wheel bearings, you know, you don't need a big brake kit as long as your brakes work. I definitely recommend changing the brake fluid. I learned that the hard way. I had like regular .3 fluid and I realized how quick that stuff starts to boil. But you can have stock brakes with a better brake fluid and it makes all the difference. But it's really just having a structurally sound car. Thankfully, I'm able to say I'm chief of tech for Emra Racing. And it's really simple. If you can pass your New York State inspection, you can pass tech to drive your car on a racetrack. You don't need to have a bucket seat. You don't need to have a roll cage. You don't need to have big aero, big brakes, you know, $5,000 wheels and tires set up. You don't. I went with, you know, some regular Hankook tires for my first event out. I had an instructor in the car with me, and I learned from there. You know, Steven taught me a lot. I learned a lot from Raul. We all learn off of each other at one point or another. And it's just a structurally sound car is key. All right. Just make sure that you know, obviously all your seatbelts work, your brake lights work, no oil leaks, you know, battery terminals are covered, tires have at least 50% tread on them, brakes have at least 50% life left in them, you know, and a good set of fluids for brakes. That's really it. And you can get yourself on track. There's plenty of people that we see on track now. There's a guy that brings a stock Volvo. A Volvo sedan, right? All he did was brake fluid and put some Bridgestone Potenza tires on it. Stock suspension, stock everything. The guy has an absolute blast. Ear-to-ear smile every day.
Wow. Stock. You know? Completely yeah. Stock.
Yeah. Doesn't take a lot.
How about you, Raul?
Yeah, no, I'm gonna agree with Chris and Steve. Like, I started off, I was working at the dealership. Everybody knows working at the dealership, it's rough.
That flat rate life.
Yeah, flat rate life, man. That's rough, you know. But somehow I made it work. Like oil change before the track day, torque my wheels, make sure that there's no play in the wheel bearings, and just get out there. People get this misconception of like, I gotta get this big brake kit. Or I gotta get this turbo. Oh, I'm not ready. Like I have friends message me, oh Raul, I wanna do what you're doing. And I'm like, yeah, dude, all right, what do you want? What are you driving? And I said, and they're like, oh, I have this, I have an STI or I have this. He's like, oh yeah, but I wanna do bigger turbo, I wanna do stage two, I wanna do intake and all this. I'm like, stop. Get on track with what's on the car right now. Just make sure you have good pads. You know, even like all season tires, like you start learning the limits of the car on all seasons. Nice set of I guess good tires would help, but all seasons is fine. I thought I would never get it on track because I thought it was like a rich man's sport. I grew up watching street racing on Nassau Expressway, and I was like, oh shit, I want to do that. You know? But then I caught myself on like the Belt Parkway in my 92 Nissan Sentra, like, you know, dipping. I know, yeah, it's not the safest, but I was like, shit, man, I'm keeping up with this, you know, Corvette or something like that. I'm like, shit, man, but I want to do this safely. So I was like, shit, let me get on an autocross course. And I went to like Nassau Coliseum. I was running with SCCA, and I feel like you minimalist, get on track and build off of that.
Like if I could piggyback off of that, like a lot of people ask me like, hey, what do I need to get on track? I'm like, a good car, a helmet, and that's it. That's really it.
And a good mindset.
Yeah, like you need to be open to constructive criticism. Like a lot of people, unfortunately, I don't want to say a lot, but I come across people sometimes who they show up like, yo, like I'm a good sim racer or, you know, I dip on the highway. And I'm like, it's very different, like very different atmosphere on a road course where everyone's going similar speeds versus a highway where, you know, you got homeboy going 55, 60 miles an hour and you're passing by like a buck 10, you know, but just it doesn't take a lot to get out there. And it's the safest way to do it. You know, you guys, like we've all done it in the street at one point or another.
Right.
But the best way, the safest way, the legal way to do it is get on a racetrack.
And I get the H out of me. Like, I'm driving and I'm like, I don't have no need to like get crazy on the road. Like,
dude, I'm a grandma.
Yeah.
I'm a grandma when I drive the car here. Like I drove it here. I was doing like 45, 50 on the LIE on the way into Manhattan.
You lose that itch because you're like, oh, I'd rather do this on the track.
I know what the car is capable of.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure.
So to piggyback off what they said, so my mom bought me a B16B, which is the Type R B16, right? And Uncle Terry, my stepdad, knows it's a fast engine, right, at the time, right? That's what the EK9 Type R came with. And his philosophy was take me to the track to get that speed out of my system. And it actually worked. And I holistically agree with everyone going to the track at a young age. So you don't do that stuff on the street.
Yes.
Even if like you're not a car guy.
Right.
Just getting on track and just knowing etiquette, safety, I feel like transition so well onto like regular street driving. Yeah.
Yes.
You're a lot safer of a driver. Like, you know what your car's capable of. You see a guy fly by and you're like, what are you doing? Like, I can blow your doors off, like, if I wanted to.
Silent killer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I tell you, I don't know. It's because, you know, the algorithms follow you on Instagram. You brought it up. I see sometimes those guys that are, and you know what's happening in Queens and, you know, in
Brooklyn,
guys that are fucking dipping.
Bronx. Yeah.
That fucking, I'm like, what the fuck? These guys are fucking crazy. There was one, I saw it. I swear to God, it was right by the JFK. There was traffic on the Belt Parkway, and this motherfucker was doing this.
Yeah,
white lining. Yeah,
I'm like,
it's insane.
You are fucking crazy.
Yeah, and you know what? I gotta say, like, when I was in high school, I graduated high school in 06. But before I graduated, I'm not gonna say a name, but there was a guy who crashed his car. He wasn't like racing anybody, but he was dipping, and he ended up hitting a tree, and his fiance was on the passenger side. Unfortunately, she lost her life.
Damn.
From that. And that's kind of what drew me towards not doing as much on the street and taking it to a track. And then I met Steven through a mutual friend, and that was just
a
gateway
grace
to something else. Yeah, because if I would have continued it, it's just like biking, like motorcycles.
Right.
It's not if you crash, it's when.
When you crash.
Yeah, it's going to happen. You're gambling every time you're out on the highway. And, like, I get it. We're young. Sometimes we don't have the money for it. I was like, but if you can save $350, you can get yourself on track.
Right.
Yeah. Yep.
100%. And you get 2 hours plus of track time.
This is a perfect segue into the question. I want every single one of you to answer this question. What is the most, oh, shit, or what is the moment that you can think of right now where you're like, oh, shit.
There's a lot
like,
of those.
Oh, fuck.
It happens.
Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I think Chris should start. I feel me and Raul are a lot riskier than Chris.
Yes.
Just because of how his car is. So.
All right. So I'll start. You know, I drive that 97 Civic. I try to keep it as clean as I can. So I'll be honest. Thankfully, I'm still competitive in my class. Driving at like 85%. I won't full send. I'll be honest. Like sometimes like I'm on the track and I'm in the zone and I'll send it like whatever happens, happens. But for the most part, I'm really aware of what's going on, where the limit of the car is, where my limit as a driver is. And my biggest goal is to enjoy myself and bring the car home in one piece. Like I took my wife on my first date in this car and my dad, no longer with us, you know, watched me start to build this car. So it has a lot of sentimental value. And I think that's why I won't push that 100 or 110%. But my biggest oh shit moment is because of Steven. I'm chasing Steven around NJMP, New Jersey Motorsports Park in Melville, New Jersey, lightning course. And there's this one left-hander. And I'm ringing out fourth gear on the rev limiter, hit the brakes hard, drop it down into third gear, and I start to turn left. And I missed the apex of the turn. The apex is like the spot where you want to be to get the quickest exit out of the turn, right? And I know I'm going to be wide, like the exit will be wide. So imagine you're taking a turn on a regular street and you take it too quick and you know you're going to end up sideswiping the cars that are parked there. So, but in this case, it's a curb, right? Like a rumble strip. And my tires went off the edge and there's a dip. So once I lost traction on that outside tire that had all the grip on it, the rear end of the car started to come around. And I'm a passenger at that point. The car starts to spin and it sends me directly towards the tire wall. Like I'm looking at the tire wall. And you know, they always say, don't look because that's where you're going to go. So I'm looking at the tire wall and I must have stopped like 4 inches before the tire wall. I got it on video and it's like I sat there and I watched in awe and I was like shaking. Driving the car back into the pits because if you go four off, they want you to come back in. They want to inspect the car, make sure no suspension's broken before you go back out on track. So I drove back into the pits and I'm like, I'm done. The session's done. Like I almost put my car on the wall.
Check your pants.
Yeah. I need to, there's definitely a little poo came out, you know, but yeah, it was just one of those instances where it caught me by surprise. Like I saw it happen in slow motion, But when you look at it from the in-car footage, it's a blink of an eye. And it just goes to show how quick, like, things can go from, yo, I'm having the best day ever, to, shit, I just put my car on the tires.
Damn.
Yeah.
How about you, Steven?
Honestly, I would say every lap. I drove a very underpowered B16 for the good part of, like, 9 years. Like, not touching the motor, not touching the trans. And it got to a point where, like, I was flat out majority of the track.
He's a beast.
Until I swapped in a B18. Then I did a K24, and then I did a K24 turbo. So I learned to tote that line between crashing and actually, like, being on track. I mean, I've crashed a car 3 times, twice on track, once on the street. But it's every lap. Every, like, flying lap you take is like an oh shit moment, because you're toting that line, but the car's at a constant slip.
Yeah.
That's how you know you're going fast.
Yes.
If you're counter steering just a little bit and the car's still going, you know you're going fast.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? That's the limit.
That's the limit.
Yes, yeah. The limit. Yep.
And I've learned that just driving an underpowered engine.
Yep.
You know, funny story. I was building a B16. I threw some toted C2s in it, and I made 190. I was like, wow, great, right? Shout out to Chameleon Tuning.
190.
Yeah, 190 out of a B16.
Chameleon's a beast, though, yeah.
And then I threw ITBs thinking I was going to make over 200, but it actually dropped to, like, 160. So, like, now I had to work harder for the same lap time.
I remember that season.
Yeah, that was a terrible season.
Yeah.
The engine blew up?
Well, that was 2020.
Oh, okay.
But you learn to just... like the slip, right? So every time you do a hot lap, so, you know, your first lap is like your warm-up, you warm up the brakes, warm up the tires, you know, you may take a second lap to warm up the brakes and tires, and then that third lap is like full send, right? And if you're not slipping a little bit and you're counter-steering a little bit and kind of feeling the little rear-end dance a little bit, you're not going fast enough.
No.
And if you're not scared, you're not going fast enough.
There's definitely time left in the lap unless you're counter-steering.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So his oh shit is basically every lap. What about yours, Raul?
It's probably every lap with him. So he's Chris and Steven are my rabbit. So I chase them. You know, they're fucking they're fast. They're really fast. And my two oh shit moments ended up being two crashes. And yeah. One of them, the last one being the reason why the car is a wide body now. But yeah, the Lime Rock crash was me chasing Steven. He's like, listen, man, follow me. I was like, all right, cool. And he had, I can't remember what setup he had at the time, but I think he had aero at the time. I had no aero. And this was at Lime Rock. This is towards the end of the season. I knew my tires were shot. I had Hankook RS3s, very slow tires. But yeah, we're coming down into the straight, and I'm looking at him, and I'm like, I'm going to catch you. He's my rabbit. So all of a sudden I'm finding that sweet spot of slip, and all of a sudden it was gone. Like, kind of like what Chris said. You hit the rumble strip, you hit a dip, and you hit grass.
God, that's the
worst.
Grass,
you just pick up speed, right? So at that point, I'm like, all right, Jesus, hold the wheel, you know? Straight into the tire wall, and the tire wall, man, I give it up to Lime Rock, man. They maintain their track. You know how, like, in drag racing, you have I think down in Maryland, there's a guy that takes care of the track very well.
Oh, yeah, Jason Miller.
Yes, exactly. Like, yo, the track prep is great. Lime Rock does a great job with catering to us.
I agree.
Tire wall, yo, it just absorbed everything, and like, I drove my...
You hit the tire wall.
Yeah. So I hit the tire wall, and I'm like, oh, crap, car shut off. I'm like, damn, it's totaled. Like, I hit the wall at 60. You can see it on my Instagram. But I'm like, holy shit. I'm there. I'm, like, stunned. I get back into the pit, and I come out. I look at the car. I think my lip broke, scuffed on the bumper. I was like...
I remember that wasn't that bad.
I drove it back home.
Yeah,
I drove it back home. I think I might have went out again, you know, because I just made sure everything was good. But that was the oh shit moment. That was my first oh shit moment. Then my second oh shit moment was at NJMP. And it was like I had just put a splitter on the car, and that just changed the whole dynamic of the car. I'm like, oh, my God, I have so much front end grip. Oh, wait, I don't have my rear set up for my front. So it wasn't balanced, right? So now I think it was like turn 3 and 4. So basically a right hander, a left hander. And I'm like, oh my God, the car has so much grip, until it didn't. And once again, I hit the tire wall, but I hit it sideways, not head on, right? So the whole car got sideswiped. I'm like, oh crap. Get back to pit, and I'm there like, oh my God. This is at Global Time Attack.
Global Time Attack,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was at Global Time Attack. And I'm like, damn, man. Oh,
didn't
man.
You set your fastest time after that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next day. That was the first day. The next day, well, that same day, Uncle Terry, Steven's stepfather, he's the guru, man. Like, he's
for
that
real.
Old guy. Like, he's
for
like
real.
A,
he's the goat.
He's like Bunta.
Honestly,
he's like
goat.
Bunta. Smoking the cigarette, like, yeah. You shouldn't have done that. I'm like, yeah, I know. So get back. He's like, oh, why are you crying? Like, why are you so sad? And I was like, oh man, the car. He's like, oh, we could do a string alignment, get the wheel straight, and you'll get back out there. He's like, really? He's like, yeah. Yo, he helped me out. Next day, I set my fastest time. I actually got second place that time, and it was awesome. Like, it just made everything so rewarding. That weekend was a up and down,
a roller
like, coaster.
Yeah.
of emotions, and those were my two oh shit moments. And I try to avoid them, but it's like a drug, man. Like, you get out there, it's like, I'm gonna go relate back to drag racing. It's like that one, like, you know, you run an 8. Oh shit, you're fucking, or 8-9, right? You break into the 8-9, into the 8, you're like, oh shit. All right, you call your tuner, you bump it up. And it's like, oh shit, man, now third gear, I have no, it's spinning. All right, you know, so at the end of the day, it's legit. I would compare it to like a drug, you know? And
oh, yeah.
those
you
are
got,
my two.
You got the need for speed, definitely,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, it was awesome having that support, because they also came back and they're like, yo, and every time we, either catastrophic failure, either Steven blowing up his engine, me crashing, or Chris getting rubber marks on rubber
scuffs on my front
end. We're like, yo, you're good. He's like, yeah, but just, you know, I gotta take this rubber mark off.
He's the meticulous one out of the group.
Exactly. But yeah, those were my two oh shit moments, and I don't want to ever go there. But you know, when you want to be competitive, and you get guys from like other states, man, these guys come full trailer, like
they come ready to go.
And we were like, oh shit, these guys. Meanwhile, we're just here trying to have fun.
Yeah.
And you know, just step it up a little bit at that point.
So you mentioned, all right. So Global Time Attack. So Global Time Attack, I don't know if you guys know, Jason Dinehart, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Jason used to be part of, like, the import culture back then, and,
absolutely,
like, he got into it. So shout out to Jason Dinehart.
Yeah. Jason's an awesome dude, man.
I saw him at PRI this year.
Nice.
Super down to earth.
Yeah, he's awesome guy. So shout out to
I didn't expect that from him.
Yeah, he's a very chillest guy.
Ever. Yeah.
I think
super
he's a
tall
racing,
too.
Like,
oh,
he's
yeah.
a drag
I never felt
events,
shorter
right?
he, in my life.
He was involved in Hot Import Nights, drag race. He was involved in that scene. So shout out. And it was really, you know, knowing that he got into Global Time Attack is really good that he's seen the culture expand.
Yeah.
So there's Global Time Attack. There's Grid Life.
Yep.
Is there anything else that I'm missing that you guys are?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every region, you know, whether it's Northeast, Mid-Atlantic, Southeast, you know, middle of the country, California, wherever you are, there's always going to be an organization local to where you are. In our case, for us, where we tend to gravitate to is EMRA, Eastern Motorsports Racing Association.
They're based out of Long Island.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're a Long Island organization. And we race pretty much in the tri-state with EMRA.
So what are the tracks that you would race in the tri-state area?
This year we're going to Palmer in late April. We're doing Palmer, Newark Safety Track. We're doing Lime Rock.
Pocono.
We're doing Pocono.
NJMP.
We're doing
Jersey.
New Jersey Motorsports Park.
So it's all within literally, I want to say, anywhere from
3 hours
to 4.
Okay.
Right.
From Queens,
maybe 5
Long Island area.
Hours out of Queens, like JFK area. Anywhere from 2 to 5 hours.
Two
from
to five
JFK.
Hours.
So that's like our local group.
Yeah.
And how big is that group?
Honestly, like it can get pretty big. Like our Lime Rock days sell out.
We sell out Lime Rock.
Yeah.
What sell out? Like 100 cars or 50
like
cars?
75 to 100 cars.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Easily.
And these are all cars on track. Yep. Not like people who come to spectate. Spectating is free, by the way, for EMRA. But it's 100 cars, you know,
that's
25
a lot of cars
per session on the track.
So out of the 100 cars, what's the category? Like, how's it categorized, basically?
You want to talk about it?
Mr.
Or?
Tech?
Yeah. Think, yeah.
So it comes down. So we have an option for power to weight, right? So depending on what your horsepower is versus the weight of your car, you can be classed. Or you can go off of your car that's on a list. For example, the FK8, I believe, ends up in ST4 as a stock car, street touring 4. And as you do modifications, let's say you add a wing and a splitter, you get what's called exception points, right? And as those points add up, it can increase your car class, right? Because you get benefits from, you know, suspension. You get benefits from aerodynamics, like a wing or a splitter.
So it's like a handicap? Is that?
Nah. I guess not so much a handicap, but it's saying, hey, look, your car is here.
Yeah.
In X, but you know, you've made it better by adding these parts.
Right.
So we're going to put you in Y.
Okay.
Right, I think so, exception points is probably the wrong terminology. You gain points for mods you do to your car. After a certain amount, you go up in class. Yes. So let's say you throw a big turbo on your car, you know, you get a certain amount of points, and then you go up to the next class.
Or penalty points, you can call them,
penalty,
I guess.
Penalty points is perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, because
I'm trying to think about this, right? So pretend, let's use me as an example. I never road raced, but I have a, I'll give you an example. I'm making this up. I have a MK4 single turbo with suspension. With a body kit, with aero, like where would I be?
What kind of power are you making?
I'm making 650.
You're probably gonna end up in ST1, maybe ST0.
Yeah.
So considering that I haven't raced though.
Yeah.
How does that? Am I racing with people that like? So how does the placement because of where my skill set is?
So the way it really starts is you need to complete an instructor course first.
Okay.
Right. So anybody who decides to come to the racetrack, whether you have a built MK4 Supra or a stock Civic, you know, you have to go through instructor sessions first, right? You're going to sit down with an instructor. The instructor's going to be with you throughout the day every time you go out onto the track, right? So he's going to walk you through, you know, where your brake zones are, where you should start to turn in, how to properly give a point by for passing, as well as when you're not on track, you have in-class sessions, right? So you're learning in class on a board through a PowerPoint and other people who have been where you've been and now are at a more advanced level can tell you, hey, look, when I was where you were, this is what we experienced and this is how we overcame it, right? So we take you from that green novice and through the instruction that we offer, we can make you a time attack driver or a wheel-to-wheel racer. Or, you know, if you don't want to compete, you can continue to do
what's wheel-to-wheel racer? What is that?
Wheel-to-wheel is more similar to whoever comes in first wins first place. Kind of like what you would do at your local go-karting track.
Okay.
Right?
Fastest wins.
You all start together. Whoever finishes first wins.
Got it.
Right? I'll speak for the three of us here. We all compete in time attack, right? We may be on the track at the same time, but Steven's in a different class than what I'm in. Raul is in a different class from what I'm in.
At that point, it's really more about the time.
Exactly. Yes.
Rather than racing the people that are on the track.
Yep. So, you know, if I've just done my quickest lap of the day, or I just tried to do my quickest lap of the day and it didn't work out, I'm going to want to cool down my tires so I can get the maximum amount of grip. And then, but I may see Raul or Steven coming up behind me. And for that, I need to know how to give a proper point by or get off of the racing line to let them pass and not interrupt.
So
their fastest lap.
Yeah. So to kind of answer your question, there's two aspects to it, right? There's driver skill and car capability.
Yes.
So you're on track based on your skill level, right? So you can have your fully built MK4 Supra, and Chris can have his single cam Civic,
and
you'll
be
on the track at the same
you.
Time. right?
And we're on the track at the same time.
At the same time.
I might be faster than you because you're not at that driver level yet.
Right. But your car is classed at a certain level because it is built, right? So now at the end of the day, when we're doing time attack or what it used to be called as time trial, your car is in this category because of the mods, right? And then you get classified with those other cars.
Yes.
So it takes out your skill level and takes just accountability for your car capability.
Yes.
Right? So when you do get the skill, which comes over time, it matches up with the car capability. And now you're classed correctly. Right? So there's three groups. There's green, which is novice. White, which is intermediate. And blue, which is advanced. At this point, we're all advanced group, right? But we all have varying levels of car. Horsepower, I should say, or speed, right? I've got a turbo EK. He's got an all-motor EK. He's got a turbo Subaru. So we'll be on track same time, but we're classed differently. So like I said, if I'm doing 140 miles an hour behind Chris and he's doing 110, he knows what to do. I know what to expect in terms of safety. I know Chris is going to be like, just go, because I know the car is faster. It's different when the driver is faster, right? So it's different if you want to measure dicks, right? You put the same person in the same car, right? But we have different cars, which is why we're all kind of cool too with each other. Like we're just in a different league, right? Like you got a turbo Subaru, you've got an all motor Honda, and I've got a turbo Honda, and it is what it is, and it's just a different class. Like
so, it's not necessarily the same. It's not based off the car, it's based off the driver that's on the track at the same time. So if you guys are all good, but he has a LX single cam, you have a Hyundai Sonata, and you have a Porsche RS, you guys are on the same course. You guys are on the track at the same time.
Experience level wise, yes.
Yeah.
Like I've been on track with C8Rs, you know, and they'll walk me on a straight, no problem. But once we start getting into the twisties, you know, I'm in their mirrors and I'm being held up in a 1.8 liter all motor Honda. You know, the car is capable. You may know how to drive per se because of your experience, your time that you've been on a racetrack, but the car may be new to you and you don't know how to handle it.
Right.
And that's when you kind of got to park your ego to the side and say,
give him
hey,
that
look,
point by.
I'm going to go and let this guy pass.
Yep. That's another good question.
Yeah.
Have you ever been in a situation where your like ego is like, fuck this shit. I'm not letting this motherfucker pass me.
I mean, I think it's been the other way around where
you're cursing.
No, yeah. I've been behind, let's say, like a C8 Corvette, and he walks me on the straight.
Yeah.
And dude, I'm on the twisties, I'm on his ass, you know?
Yeah.
And then his ego gets into play, and that's another part, right?
So, like, what is he doing? Like, he's staying on the same line that you are.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, because guess what? On the straightaway, I'm going to walk you.
Right.
But if we're doing that for three laps, I'm like, yo, dude, give me a point by. You know what I'm saying? Like, let me get by you. Let's make this interesting. Let's make this fun. And, you know, that's where ego plays a part. And the same thing with, like, instructing. Like, so I'm an instructor for EMRA, right? And, like, a lot of it is trying to manage that person's ego. So
yes.
Like perfect example at like Pocono, they asked me, hey Raul, you want to instruct? I said, yeah, no problem. All right, we got two guys that need instructors. He's driving a Mazda, a Miata, and the other guy's driving a Corvette. He has R888Rs in the front, all seasons in the rear. I'm like, I'll go with the Miata. Just because I know that
he's not gonna give you a hard time.
Exactly.
The ego's not there.
Yeah, the ego's not there because guess what? The guy in that Corvette, he's like, oh, I know my car. It has the sticker.
I've got 500 horsepower.
I bought this car and they told me that the sticker said it makes 500 horsepower.
Zero to 60.
Yeah, exactly. So I know I'm gonna get him on the straight. So I'd rather deal with that one guy that has that Miata with a 1.6, 100 horsepower than the guy with 500 horsepower because he's like, oh, his ego's big, right? Not saying all.
Is that, okay, I was going to just say, is that.
I was
is
just
going
to say.
Is that. Is that like,
it's
can
not
you define
across the
everybody
board.
Saying, oh shit, like,
no,
any.
It's not across the board.
Okay, no. Okay. Like, there's some really cool, like, guys that have, like, fast C8 Corvettes, and, you know, they come back and they're like, holy crap, you were on my ass the whole time. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
He's like, I gave you that pump. I was like, yeah, I appreciate it, man. So it becomes like a good communication. Then you see him at the next event and you're like, oh shit, that guy. So then when you get on track again, you're like, oh, that guy. All right. So then he moves over and gives you that point buy and stuff like that. And that's when it becomes fun, you know, and safe, right?
It does, because at the same time, like, I may learn from him and he may learn from me, right? If he gives me the point buy, he may see a different line through certain turns that he's never tried before, right? Granted, very different.
Chris, sorry to cut you off real quick. Yeah. I'm not familiar with the taking over. So, like, can you explain to me when does a racer take over?
Yeah, so usually the way it works for Time Attack, at least, is depending on what experience level you're in, right? So beginners, you're only allowed to pass in the straights, right? Okay. You can't pass in turns. Intermediate, you can pass, you know, in a couple of extra places, straights, maybe one or two turns. Advance, you can pass anywhere regardless whether someone gives you a point buy or not. So you may have to earn it, or someone may be doing the right thing and give you the point buy. Meaning, if, let's say, for example, I see Steven or Raul coming up behind me, and I know for a fact that these guys are quicker mile per hour on the straight than I am, I'm just going to pull off of the actual racing line, which is meaning the optimal spot to keep your car to have the fastest lap that you can, right? So if it's, whether it's being on the left side or the right side or the middle of the track, I'm going to pull off to the side a little bit and give them the space that they need to continue, because I know they're going to be faster than me, right? So that's where the overtaking comes into place, right? If I'm smart about it, I'll do it in an area where it doesn't affect the two of us, right? On the right, closer to the beginning of
when
the
you say
straight.
That when you say it doesn't affect, are you the one that's in the lead, or you're coming?
Yeah, I would be the one ahead. Okay, okay. Right, like I'm ahead in the lap,
right?
But I'm a slower car, right? So for example, let's say we're coming into the first turn of the lap, right? Maybe I'll be in the middle of the racetrack for the straight, so they can stay on the left side if it's a right-hand turn, right? Because you want to come from the left into the right and then out to the left. Out and out is usually your fastest route through a turn, meaning outside of the track, going to the inside of the apex, and then back to the outside of the track. So if I can position my car to give them enough space to pass me,
yeah,
and then I can try to keep up with them to give myself, you know, either a better line that I've never used before, or, you know, maybe, and this is on an advanced level, is use them as a draft, right? Have them punch a hole in the air, right? Because air essentially is resistance, right? Atmospheric pressure is what, 14.7 pounds, right? So if they already made that hole in there and I can use that to my advantage, I can potentially end up with a quicker lap, right? But essentially, it really comes down to just being respectful and knowing the capability of your car, right? I mean, we've all been to the same tracks together. My top speed that I've, the quickest I've ever had in my sedan is maybe 126. That's it. On like a really good day, you know, everything's optimal. And these guys, I mean, Steven, what was your mile per hour?
I think I'm trapping like 145, and that's just because I run out of road.
It's like another 20 miles an hour compared to what I am.
What was your top speed?
I'd say like 127. And just like having good self-awareness, track etiquette. I think what Chris is saying is like just having good track etiquette. Like if I know that the guy behind me is a fast driver, and you know, I might be like, all right, you know what? On the straightaway, I'm going to pull off the racing line and I'm going to let him by, because it's having him in my rear view mirror. It's not going to make, at least for me, it's not going to make me go faster. If anything, I want to be behind him and maybe I see something.
So you could draft him.
Exactly. So having good track etiquette and safety comes. I think safety is a big thing. Like
the biggest thing.
That's going back to like the foundation, what we were talking about. Like, let's say you want to get on track, right?
Yeah.
We'll put you on, like what Chris was saying, we'll put you on to like that first day you're going to be with an instructor. You're going to, your first session, your first time, you're going to be in a classroom and they're going to go over the whole track They're going to go over the flags, all this stuff. And yeah, just being aware. I think being aware makes it fun for everybody. Because at the end of the day, we all want to go home, right? With the car intact.
Intact.
Right?
And clean.
And clean, yes.
No rubber marks.
But yeah, that it comes down to like having good track etiquette, just being kind of respectful in a sense, you know? That's it at the end of the day. And I think we get that a lot, you know, with Emra. Emra's, they're awesome. Like, it becomes a family. So you'll see a guy come in this year and he's quick and then he realizes, oh, I'm not that quick, you know, and we're just like, no, come hang out with us.
You know what? Sorry to cut you off. No. You guys got to talk to my brother, Brian, right? I swear he's been talking for like 2 years now that he wants to go road racing.
Dude, let's get him out on track.
Bro, he has, Nick, how many cars is this guy?
My brother, I know he's got Rob's old CRX.
He bought Rob's CRX.
Yeah.
He bought an EF.
Yeah.
Who owns a Viper?
That's my brother, Brian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he, oh, I got to get this. I got it.
Nah.
I'm calling Brian.
Yo,
now.
Brian, get him. Come through.
Yeah,
he got you.
Rob, just tell him to take his car out, man.
Come
bring
through.
The car. He's always, he's
bring
very,
it out.
Oh, I need this. I need to make sure that blah, blah, blah is, I'm like, you have like three cars that you want to road
Pick
race.
One. Pick one.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'm like, but you guys just explained it, right? You don't need.
No.
You don't have to have the big brakes. You don't have to have that all that other stuff. Like,
no.
So after this, I'm going to give you my brother's number and you give him a call and you say, just come out.
I'm going to just hit him on IG and just so slide in those DMs.
I have an older coworker, right? I met, like, he's a coworker of mine. And then all of a sudden I'm like, why are you here? And he's like, racing. But anyways, he brought his like 2000, I think it was like a 2017, 2018 Corolla. He brought it and he's in a ST6 or ST7, which is like really low classing for what the car is. And dude, he has a blast. Like, he has a blast.
Hey.
I think he was running at one point winter tires and he was having a blast and he drove it back home. He actually went to work right after the track.
I'm going to need your guys' help. We'll get on his Instagram after this, and we're going
to
have
to
delete that.
I'd love to get you out there, too, man. If I got to stick you in my car,
well,
and you take it for a couple laps.
I'm in that same position, too.
What car you drive, Frankie?
So I'm in that same position, too. So I just found that. So I have a... So that's my GTR right there.
All
right,
hell yeah.
I'm not going to road race that one.
Yeah, no, that's really nice.
I have a... I just bought an E92 M3.
There you go, hell yeah.
I just found out. So I bought it. I bought it from Arizona. I bought the car because I wanted to race it because... It's, you guys know, I don't know if you do know, if you know, it's the last V8, naturally aspirated V8.
The
I love the
one.
Sound of it.
You did the rod bearings?
So there's two things. Actually, there's three things. I feel like my throttle actuators are going. I do need to do the rod bearings because it's at 60,000.
Yeah, it's that time.
And then I just found out, the guy that I bought it from, so he hooked it up. He freaking flipped the rotors backwards. So the rotors are backwards. Which
left should be on right should be on left.
Which could cause bad heat sinking.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I got to work on those three things, and I'm going to hit you guys up.
Hell yeah, let's do it, man. I'd love to get you out there.
But
we'll
I know
some lead follows.
The rod bearings are a little expensive
normal
for me right now.
Normal maintenance.
Yeah, that's normal maintenance on a BMW.
That's BMW stuff.
But, you I that's why I bought the car. I was like, you know, I want to actually
use it.
I followed my brother. I was like, I want to road race, but I think I'm going to beat him. I'm going to be Brian before he actually starts racing.
Sorry, Brian.
So what is your, let's go through it. What's your favorite racetrack, Steven?
Like I said, I'm super high risk, super high reward. Honestly, it's Lime Rock. I've learned to love that track. There's no runoff. There's no room for error. It's almost a street circuit.
Yeah.
And the minute you put, it's literally a minute around the track. Like, you put that
that's
lap
a quick
together,
time around that track.
It's
yeah,
like, it's like, wow. Like, I can't explain it in words. Like, you have to feel it. Like, you have to actually push your car to that limit that you actually are going fast at a track that, like, you can literally total your car in a split second, right? And you conquer that. It's, like, not only an achievement that you conquered it, it's an achievement that you went around this track faster than everyone else. And didn't crash, and can still drive it home. So there's one time I drove the car to the track, full aero, full tires, full whole nine.
That was for a statement, though. It was a street car, right?
Yeah, it was.
Street
so
car.
It was for the street
people
car.
People were saying, no, that's not a street car.
It was for the
street car
statement. I ain't going to lie. Like,
street car, what does that mean? Like,
street car has plates and registration.
Oh.
Right?
That's it.
Okay.
So if my street car, which is parked here with a full K24 turbo and full aero, has legal registration and legal... inspection, it's a street car.
Legal.
I drive a street car on the street, right?
I mean, we come out for the prime things here in the city.
Right.
We drive it. Yeah.
Right. We drive our cars on the street. And if I drive my street car, although it's got a cage and gutted, you know, that's subjective, right? It's a street car. It's on the street. I drive it on the street. You can see it. It's a full street car with a radiator and a thermostat, the whole nine. Right.
Yeah, regular coolant, not water and
regular
water wetter.
Coolant.
Yeah.
Like, not anything crazy. If I drive that to the track and I beat your race car that's fully gutted with like Hoosier slicks, which the car has its 230 tires, which is classified as a street tire, or high performance summer.
Tire, yeah.
Like, that's a statement and a half. And I'm going to drive it home at like fully function, which is why I said reliability is key.
Yeah.
So I fully support the whole street car thing. Like, if you can't drive your car on the street and it's just a track car, like, I personally like to enjoy my cars.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing to have, a nice car that you drive on the weekends, which is cool. You know, I'm getting older. I probably want that right now, right? Maybe if I could take out my future girlfriend or future wife, whatever. But
yeah, he's single, by the way.
Yeah.
Single ladies.
Anyway, but, like, I like to enjoy my car. Like, there's very expensive parts. Like, every time I drive it, I'm thinking, oh, crap. The service life of these parts are going down, which is true, but that's part of the game with anything. You know, we're here for a temporary time.
A good time, not a long time.
There you go. A good time, not a long time. So I'm not trying to pass this down to my kids, which is cool, which is great if you can do that. But it's Honda Civic. Like, I'm here to beat the shit out of that thing. And
you really
fun.
Do. You really do.
So... I drive my car at 110%, and I love driving at 110%, because at the end of the day, like, I feel I gave it my all. If I didn't win, I gave it my all. If I did win, I gave it my all.
Any accolades here amongst everyone?
I think we all have accolades.
Yeah. We've all done well.
Okay,
we've
that's
all
good.
Have fastest laps at tracks. We've all have championships. But that's not why we do this.
No.
I want to make that clear. That's not why we do this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not here to like set records or anything. Like, I got into it because I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, I built a car on my own in my garage.
Before you keep going, Chris, what's your favorite racetrack?
I'm going to agree with Steven. There's two. Right? I don't think Steven's been to the other one. Lime Rock is absolutely, top two, 100%. I think that's number one, to be honest with you. It's an adrenaline rush because it's so quick, right? I can get through that car through that track. I think mostly because I'm on motor, but I think Steven does the same thing with his turbo car. Minimal lift and minimal brake. It's just the way the track is designed. It's an adrenaline rush from finish line, from start to finish. And because it's so quick of a track, you realize where your mistakes are and you can go within another minute to correct them. And, we're out there for 20 minutes to a half hour at a time, right? So I've got, if I can get around there in a minute or just over a minute, I've got at least 25 laps that I can put out, and if I can make corrections as I go along, it's a benefit, as opposed to other tracks. I haven't been to Watkins Glen, but I've heard it's incredible. But there's, 18 or 14 plus turns there.
It's also like 8 hours from home, right? Or some
shit
like
that's
that.
That's a trip.
Yeah.
That's a trip.
Meanwhile, Lime Rock's like 2.5 hours.
Yeah, Lime Rock's like 2 hours, with a trailer. 215, 220. But Lime Rock, definitely, and then Palmer in Massachusetts. That's like a 3.5-4 hour drive. Yes. Palmer Motorsports Park.
Where is that? Is that like south, or is it like in the middle?
So it's like, let's say you go through mid Connecticut, into Massachusetts, so southwest Massachusetts.
Okay.
And there's 14 turns, 250 feet ish of elevation. And it's another one of those tracks where you just, you finish it and you want to do it again. And you just keep going and going and going. And what I love about Palmer is this is one short straight where you're literally going uphill and all you see is sky. You don't see the, you like, you see the crest, but you don't know where you need to turn in. And it just, it creates a better driver.
Oh, wow.
Out of that. Yeah.
About you, Raul, what's your favorite track?
Man, I would say Lime Rock one, but a close second, NJMP Lightning.
Okay.
I'm going to agree with them. Fucking.
You guys say Lightning. Is there a difference?
Yeah, so NJMP, okay. NJMP is a motorsport park.
Yep.
So there's Thunderbolt. Yeah.
Thunderbolt.
And then there's Lightning.
So two tracks.
Two tracks. I personally like Lightning.
Okay.
But that's just me. First Lime Rock, it flows very well. If you could get under sub minute, you're fast, you know. And then a quick second would be NJMP Lightning. NJMP Lightning, I don't know what you guys think about it, but I enjoy it. Yeah, I enjoy it.
I started at Lightning.
Yeah.
That was my first track day. That's my second favorite because it is also a high risk, high reward.
Yes.
It's a little longer too. It is a little longer, and it's just like Lime Rock. And if you mess up, like there's not much room for error.
Yeah. I actually blew my motor up at Lightning.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, so hold on. I blew up my motor, but that motor was a stock, just to give the audience an idea of what I run, right? It's a stock 2.0 WRX motor that you find on a GD chassis from 2002 all the way to 2007 or 6 or whatever. And all I did was all the, reliable stuff. I did air oil separator pickup and a windage tray. And I got fancy and I got a nice oil pan, right? But at the end of the day, like, I have a stock turbo. I mean, stock STI turbo, but overall, it's very basic. Yeah. And I ran that for maybe 5 seasons until it blew at Lightning. And that's when I went with a built motor and stuff like that. But that's what I tell people. I'm like, just get out there.
Just get out there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's why I advocate that.
So you guys mentioned your favorite track. What would be your dream track that you would love to race on? Start with you, Steven.
Probably Circuit of the Americas. That's a Formula One facility, right? And you're on the track as the same time, well, same asphalt as a Formula One car. I think that's pretty much short of a street circuit like Miami or Las Vegas that Formula One cars drive on, right? So I think that's probably the dream track for a lot of circuit racers. Like, it's not cheap to race there. The facility is not cheap at all.
No.
You get a lot for your money. I think Global Time Attack is and Super Lap Battle is there in February and early March maybe. You got a garage and the whole nine, but then you're on the same asphalt as a Formula One cars, you know, the same facility as a Formula One car. You get to use the same garages. So for me, it's COTA.
How about you, Chris?
It's like a fanboy thing for him, I guess. No, I'm gonna keep it real simple. Like Gran Turismo, we've all played that. Right, you guys remember Laguna Seca?
Hell yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, Laguna Seca.
Laguna Seca. That's
you
it.
You beat
like,
me to it.
That's my dream. Like, I just want to drive Laguna Seca.
Corkscrew.
I'm like, I got exactly the corkscrew.
There we go.
The corkscrew's it. I'll probably spin the car. Maybe I'll hit the tires because I'm gonna think I'm faster than I am. But yeah, Laguna Seca is it, man. Like, it's just something about being on an iconic track like Laguna Seca, with that one specific turn that's just been in every racing video game.
How about you, Raul?
Man, I'm gonna agree with Chris. Laguna Seca, man. Like Gran Turismo, you played it as a kid. I used to grab a 22B and get on Laguna Seca. But I'm also gonna, you know, agree with Steven, man. COTA's awesome. Like I watched the live stream with Super Lab Battle. Holy crap! Like it's a big track. Like I think the times there are like 2 minutes versus like we're used to a minute at Lime Rock. You know, they're there at like if you're running a 2 minute flat, like you're fast.
That's
you're
fast
as hell. And I think that Jason and everybody there running Super Lap Battle, they're doing a great job. And I think that they and I agree with them, like making it like a North American Time Attack track and just like making it that track. Like if you can, like kind of like going back to like Scuba. What is it?
Scuba
in Japan. Yeah,
in Japan, right? Like we all have JDM cars, right? And it's like, let's make Coda our
track, U.S. to
our
Scuba.
U.S. track. Yeah, you know.
I'm actually surprised you guys didn't say Nürburgring.
Oh, those are cool. They have really good videos of BMWs crashing.
Yeah.
No.
No.
You brought up Gran Turismo, and that was my favorite track, only because it was long.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what I think deters me from it. Right.
It's
I'm so used to like a short track like Lime Rock, where you know, about a minute is a quick lap. The other track, Palmer, that I told you about, a minute 50 seconds is fairly decent.
Yeah.
You know, NJMP Lightning, which we were talking about, a minute, anything under a minute 15, you're pretty quick.
Yeah.
You know, Nürburgring is 7 minutes plus, right? Yeah. That's a Porsche time. GT3 is 7 minutes.
You might run out of fuel.
I'll probably, you know what I mean? I'll empty my tank before I get around there.
Yeah. But,
all right, but no, all right. I mean, obviously, that would be amazing. You know, but I think we kind of took it as like U.S. tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, next time when someone thinks it, think
bigger.
Big.
Think big.
Think big and like,
Nürburgring.
This shit ain't never going to happen, but I'd
Suzuka.
Love to do it.
Suzuka.
Yeah, you never know.
Yeah, I think honestly, the pinnacle of track for me, it's a Scuba. Like,
yes.
Japan leads the world in time attack.
Yes.
Right? So like, if I have a time attack car, that's the pinnacle for me.
Right.
Right? So... For me, I would want to go to Tsukuba and
like
just see
did.
Where I stack up with the other cars, like on a world stage.
Those guys running sub minutes.
Yeah, we
Tsukuba.
Have guys
that's
like
fast
shipping
yeah.
their cars from Australia, California. You know,
Ferris Quantanamy.
Kartumi, yeah. He's like leading, you know, the leading time attack guy
in North America. Yeah. He's setting the stage for us.
Yeah.
You know, so you mentioned Gran Turismo, right?
Yeah.
You guys watched the movie Gran Turismo?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and you kind of delved into this a little bit before about like e-racing versus real racing and stuff like that. What's your opinion about if I was a really good racer, e-racer, would you discount me?
I don't think I would discount you. I think the difference between an e-racer versus someone who's actually been on track is the forces that you feel in the car, right? You can build a sim in your house, but it's stationary, right? You don't feel the g-forces that we feel in the car, whether it's minimal g-forces or not. Like, we have data monitors in our car. I know for a fact, Steven and I have hit 2 G's, lateral G's in the car through turns. Yeah. And you'll never get that feeling in a sim. You know, you can get the lean if you get something with hydraulics or with air or whatever. It's like, but you won't feel yourself getting pushed to the other side of the car. What the car feels like, how the car starts to rotate from under you and how you have to counter steer, right? Like that you won't get from a sim. But in a real car, you would. Not saying that you can't figure it out, because the movements are very similar. Right, you can see it on your screen that the car is starting to face a different angle, right? Because driving a car is for the most part linear, right? You're looking in the direction that you want to go, but if your car suddenly isn't facing the direction that you want to go, you need to either increase input or decrease input out of the steering wheel. And I think that's where the difference from a sim racer to somebody who's been on track comes into play.
Yeah. What are your thoughts, Steven?
Sim racing gets you to a certain level. Real racing, like, people joke about the butt dyno. The butt dyno is a real thing.
Real.
Yes. It's a real thing. So, like Chris said, it's all about the slip. So, like, it's literally the fine line between drifting and grip racing, and you need to be right in the middle for a fast lap. Like, you see Formula One cars, which I'm only using that example because people are most familiar with that. They look planted and they look like they're going around the corner fully gripped up, but they're not. There's a level of slip on every track car that it goes through.
Yeah.
that you don't see,
yep,
that you can only feel, right? So I think sim racing will get you to a certain level, but then to be like a champion and like a person that like can do this repeatedly over and over. So repetition is important, right?
Yes.
Like I can set one flying lap and it'll be a lucky lap, you know, because in our kind of racing, conditions are actually more important than drag racing.
Yeah.
Right? Because drag racing, you start your car up, you warm it up to a certain temperature, you do a burnout and make a hit, right? With us, we do an outlap and we're like, oh no, I don't like how the outlap feels.
Yeah, the tires don't feel hot.
Tires don't feel that great. Maybe my tires are low on thread, or
I didn't take out enough air.
Right, you didn't take out enough air. The tire pressure is not right. So with circuit racing, it's a lot more complex, which I think is a reason why it's not that popular, right? Drag racing, sorry to say, but like you put your foot down and the fucking car does whatever it wants to do and you go, right? But with circuit racing, it's very situational, right? At the pinnacle of our sport, conditions is number one,
yeah,
right? Right tire pressure, right tire temp, right brake temperature, right tire tread depth.
Right camber.
Right camber. Everything has to be right.
Yeah.
Right? For this super flying lap that you're going to do.
Yes.
Just one.
Right. Because if you try to do the same effort in the second lap, it's not going to happen because the tire temperatures are different.
Exactly. Yep.
The brake temperatures are different. Everything is different.
Engine oil temperature.
But with drag racing, sorry to say, like you put your foot down, you're fucking flying. Right? I see GTRs do 6 seconds. You put your foot down, you steer the steering wheel a little bit, and the car does whatever it does. Right?
The automatic ones, yeah.
Right. The automatic ones. Impressive because you've built a machine to do that, right? But as a driver, you're not doing much other than putting your foot down and steering the vehicle. But with us, we're steering the vehicle,
braking.
We're doing inputs, brake, gas, over the course of a minute plus. Not to downplay that, but like there's a lot more factors
in
circuit racing than there is in drag racing.
Have you guys done sim racing?
I have not. Just whatever they have here at the auto show. I haven't built my own. It's expensive, and the money that I would put into a sim, I'd rather put in the
car.
I've
seen some guys like spend like $40,000-$50,000
on
a simulation.
That shit is crazy.
I think sim racing is good for like maintenance. So like,
yeah,
off season, you get on the sim and you just get on there and you just
maintain those little,
you know,
right,
inputs.
Yeah, just.
Do you guys do that with like Gran Turismo? Do you guys?
Yo, to be
is Lime Rock on Gran Turismo?
No, it's not.
No, it's not, right?
Not on GT7.
Yeah.
I want to get a sim rig, but they're expensive. I look at it
like a good one's expensive.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and you want all those inputs. You want a good shifter. You want a good steering wheel.
Yeah, you want the responsiveness.
Exactly.
You want to try to simulate some sort of angles and stuff like that.
I think that it's sim racing is great for maintenance. Like on the off season, I get that itch. You get on the sim. You know,
good.
It's gone.
Yeah, there's this my buddy does iRace.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Iracing. iRace.
Yeah.
And he's like hardcore on that. He's got a couple of nice cars.
And you know what? Like when you know how your car reacts and then you go to iRacing, it's good because like Steven said, the butt dyno's real. You can input those settings into iRacing and it's very similar. I'm not going to say it's exact. I might get some backlash for that, but it's very similar. You know, the car will slip the way your car slips. You may not feel it the same because you're not getting pushed to the left or to the right of the seat the way you would in your car, but the car is going to react similar. So like Raul says, it's good for maintenance, right? Or if you want to experience a new track, let's say, you know, I've got a friend who lives in Ohio, came up to race at Lime Rock for the first time with GridLife a couple of years ago. He's like, I've never been to Lime Rock. He goes, and I need to be prepared and competitive.
You got on the sim.
Loaded it up on iRacing in the sim. He's like, I knew what the braking distances were like. I knew the length of the turns. And that helped me, you know, fine tune. Like, I didn't need the first session to learn the track. I learned it on iRacing, right? But now I fine tune the rest of the car throughout the first day, you know, actually being there. Yeah, so definitely sim racing can play a benefit, but don't let it get to your head and think that, yo, I know this.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same.
It's not the same.
So based off of that, do you think that Gran Turismo movie
Yeah, I think, I mean, obviously it happened. You know, this kid made it happen.
Yeah, yeah, but, in real life, but.
It's not easy. Look at everything he had to go through in the movie. I mean, the movie's a movie. But at the end of the day, what he was explaining, what the guy who was the trainer was explaining to the guy who was the new driver was very different. I mean, one of the clips, a guy got out of the car and threw up.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like, I've a buddy of mine who's here, Chris Poncho, he was one of my students. Being a passenger in a car like that,
you get car sickness.
Yeah, you get car sickness.
You experience that as an instructor.
The last race, yeah. The last event we went to at Lime Rock at with Emra. I was instructor for a buddy of mine, and I got car sick, right? Because I know what the car is capable of, and like I'm expecting certain feelings, and I'm not getting them, or I'm getting more feelings than I thought I was going to get.
And your mind just got...
And, yeah, the brain just wasn't there. Like the mind-to-body interlink wasn't there, and I ended up missing the last session of the day because I was sitting there slumped. Like, my buddy brought me chicken nuggets because he's like, bro, you look pale. He's like, you need something to eat.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
All right, so let's each one of you answer this, right? I'm a new racer. Based off of your experience and what you guys have done, what is one tip that you would give to a newbie out there that wants to race?
I'll start.
Go for it, Steve.
As simple as it is, ask questions. You need to ask questions. Like, you need to be humble and open enough to criticism to ask questions. What's going on? Why is your car doing this? Why is your car like this? It's such a complex sport that you need all the information you can get, which is why, like, when I go to the track, I ask questions myself. I'm 12 years into this stuff, right? And I still ask, yo, why do you do that? Why do you do this? Why do this? Why is this that way, right? And I still ask these guys, like, why'd you do that? Don't you think this? Right? And it's more of a discussion rather than an argument.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? it's not criticism, like, yo, that's the wrong.
Right.
Or, it's more like, you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's
so to further the sport, right? Because it's not like drag racing. We don't get paid to win, right? That's I think that's a big downside. We don't get paid to win like drag racing.
I wish there was big payouts.
I wish too.
Yeah.
Maybe in the bigger races, like
oh yeah, yeah.
You know, we get a little plastic trophy and it's like, right. Hey, you did a good job.
Yeah, but those payouts, man, in Maryland, MRI?
I mean, even then for the amount of money that people put into racing.
Talking still, about
it's not yeah
you definitely don't get your money's no. back.
The
I'll tell
fast
you
guy, you know, podcast that you had, you know, he's got two spare engines, a trans, you know, the money that it takes to get there, you know, the hotel, everything else. It's like we invest that too.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like I've got two spare transmissions.
Yeah,
I'm in the middle of building a spare engine.
Yeah, we have a spare motor. We spent 15 hours driving from Queens all the way to Rhode Atlanta. And we're driving. I have at the time I had a Jeep Wrangler and I was flat towing my Subaru. We get out there 15 hours and we paid for gas. Everybody has their consumables and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, we went there and we didn't even get a trophy because we just went there for the experience. And we noticed oh shit, we got to step it up because you got guys coming from Canada. You got guys coming from California. These guys are fast. Like
Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado. The Colorado.
You name it.
He's summarizing the trip. I think you should tell the whole trip.
Oh, yeah, no. The trip was crazy. Like, we left Queens, and then Uncle Terry, Steve's... They took a flight. We drove 15 hours. We get to Rhode Atlanta. We're like, oh, damn, we're fucking exhausted.
Meanwhile, they're like, chilling.
They're chilling. They're like, oh, how was the drive? And I was like, that shit was rough. We were on walkie-talkies trying to keep... Between keep me and his brother, up. We were trying to, like, keep each other up. And this is the type of stuff that we do for the love of
the sport. Because you guys love doing it.
Yeah.
Going back to it's a drug.
I mean, we don't have the financial backing to pay a transporter.
Mm. So for that Road Atlanta race, travel, spare equipment, spare whatever you needed, all the equipment that you needed. How much does it cost to go road racing in Road Atlanta?
So my wife might be listening to this, so I don't know if this was that.
Nah, so I'm single. I'll say it. So for me, it was a very expensive trip. I had built a motor that same winter, right? I had stroked my 1.6 B16B into a B18C. So it's a crankshaft, piston rods, ITBs. Machine work, and ITBs, right? So all that probably costs like $4,000. Entry fee is $1,000. Gas to and from is another $1,000. Right. So let's say $6,000.
Did we sleep in the truck?
Huh?
Did we sleep in the truck? I think we slept in the truck the first night. Yeah.
I slept. Oh, and no hotel. Sleeping in my truck that I drove 15 hours into. To only blow up the motor the first session of the day, on a 2-day event, $6,000.
So $6,000 trip,
and you didn't bring a spare engine. No?
On an hour of actually driving,
and you didn't even stay in a hotel.
Didn't even stay at a hotel.
So that's dedication right there.
Yeah. That's where the beers and barbecue come in, man.
Yeah, you start drinking, you're like, oh fuck it. Yeah. It is what it is.
I mean, really, is you bring a tent, you can get a tent and some pillows, and that's all you really need, right?
Yeah. No, yeah, for sure.
So my wife comes out with me a lot to these races. Like, she's super supportive, thankfully. And because she comes out with me, I don't sleep in the truck, right? She's like, I want at least a hotel somewhere, you know,
so she's
I can
your
shower,
administrator.
Whatever.
She does all your planning.
Yeah, so she's like, look, Holiday Inn's going to cost us this much, right? So she's like, make sure you got this to cover the Holiday Inn for 2 days or maybe 3 days, depending where we're going.
I think having a good support system, like family-wise.
Yeah.
Family-wise, they'll come out to events. Like, they came out to Circuit
Legends.
Oh, it
makes Legends. It all worth it. Yeah.
It makes it all worth it, you know? They're like, oh, shit, all those nights in the garage building the motor and stuff like that. Why the fuck are you doing it? Why? And then they come to the event. They're like, oh, wow.
This is why you do this shit.
This is why you do it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, Grid Life puts on a great event at Circuit Legends. And it made it worthwhile in my eyes.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, if I could tell anybody, I mean, Circuit Legends is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be one of the best weekend events I've ever been to.
I'm in Jersey, so just hit me up.
Yo, Sleep Race, man.
Yeah, you just hit me up. I'll be out there.
Yeah, Circuit Legends is awesome. Like,
that's cool.
I mean, not only do they have like full course drifting on a regular road course, they got wheel-to-wheel racing,
that was the
time
first,
attack.
Grid Life was the only sanctioned event that they were able to get drifting done at Lime Rock.
Oh,
first
really?
Time ever. Lime Rock's been around for like 80-something years. Yeah.
And they never had drifting.
They never had drifting.
The only really legit course is Road Atlanta that allowed drifting.
Yes.
On the East Coast, at least. Yeah.
And it's nice because you get to
until E-Town came around.
Right.
But,
right.
It's nice. You get to see like all the drifters.
You know, so sorry to cut you off.
Yeah.
Because you guys talk about it a lot about slipping, right? Do you think it'd be easy to drift?
No. I don't think I could do it.
I think we could do it.
I think we could do it. I think drifters just make good road racers. So the transition is easier. Like I saw Ryan Turek.
Yeah.
He went from drifting and then he got into Judd.
He built that Supra.
The Supra, and he did that great V10. Time just because he knows that limit of drifting.
Slip versus grip.
So you guys would have a difficult time drifting.
Yeah,
we're
like, oh shit.
I would have a difficult time.
I beg to differ.
Yeah, because you're still living your dream
having the Civic. So that'd be a little bit, it'd be harder
so believe
for front-wheel drive.
They say front-wheel drive, like track drivers, are good at rear-wheel drive because you set up the front-wheel drive car for the rear to slip.
Yes.
Right? So it's always dancing, right? We're always toting that line, right? So again, not to shoot, I shot a drifter, drag racers. I don't want to shooting shots at drifters now, but I think we can do it. I think we can do it, and it's a flashy sport, right? But if we talk about as a human being, right? Like, I want to do my best in life, and I want to try the hardest, and the hardest and most difficult thing is circuit racing, right? Like, there's throttle, gas, and turning inputs that like you have to get spot on, which is why Formula One is the pinnacle of our sport, right? Yeah. You're driving a car that has full aero on the limit, and aero is situational. Aero is dependent on the air that's moving, right? So if wind changes, aero changes, and what you thought is okay on this turn is not okay on the next turn because of the air.
Direction
moving.
Of the wind. Yeah.
And you can't predict the air. But drag racing and drifting is slow enough that you don't have to predict that, right? Drag racing has enough power to push through the air. Drifting is slow enough that you don't have to worry about the air. But circuit racing is a blend of both. And I think circuit racers have the best driving skill because they have to deal with so many factors. which is why I mentioned tire temperature, brake temperature,
oh man,
air temperature, what's it called? Density, altitude, which drag racers use. So drag racers pull up DA? Okay.
DA's... Well, no, drag racing does have density because the altitude does impact the air to fuel ratio, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. But like you pull up, oh, DA is negative 1,000 today. The car's going to run great. Input fucking boost level, right? But with us, it's like, oh shit, I got to worry about tires. I got to worry about brakes. I got to worry about my engine. My engine tune, is it going to work? Is my ECU set up for atmospheric pressure or not, like a Motec? Or is it a Honda where it's just super simple, just reading a map? All those factors are put into the equation, right? So circuit racing is the most complex form of racing because you have to deal with all of the factors. You're slipping and you're gripping at the same time.
Yeah, another thing to like go with that, like I know a lot of drag racers will bring their tuner with them to the track. Right. A lot of times, I mean, I've never had that privilege. You know, maybe I just don't have enough money to do it. But yeah, I mean, again, shout out to Chameleon. He's tuned these cars amazing. Like I'm able to turn lap after lap after lap after lap. And the car is essentially a turnkey car and go. I don't know what kind of voodoo magic that man works in there. Keyboard. With the laptop.
It's the keyboards.
It's all those ones and zeros that he does, but you know. Steven put me on the Chameleon, and Chameleon is just like a wizard. At least for us.
For Hondas,
you know?
Yeah, not for sure. I've gone through several Subaru tuners.
Yeah, like he's hooked it up to the point where like, bro, I turned my car on. It turns on every time. It performs every time, like altitude or not. Like we go from Pocono to New Jersey. Pocono's up in the mountains. New Jersey is like sea level.
Yep.
You know, and the car performs great. Either one I go to. I don't know what he does. I don't know what kind of little cocaine shit he sprinkles on it, but that car just, it works, you know?
So I know we went a little bit on a tangent.
Yeah.
And Steven already answered it. What would be the number one tip that you would give to a person that wants to get into road racing?
Don't be nervous. Like, it looks intimidating because there's so much going on. It's so new to so many people. But this stuff has been around forever, you know? Don't hesitate to ask. If there's one thing I can say, I've never felt a gatekeeping situation in Time Attack or Road Racing.
Yep.
Right? Like, I remember, again, you know, we all start street racing somewhere. I would go to Erskine Street or Hunts Point, whatever, and I would ask guys, like, you know, like, what kind of engine are you running? What pistons are you running? This, that, and the other. Oh, no, that's the secret sauce, kid.
Yeah,
can't tell
they would
you.
Close the hood.
Whatever, they would close the hood.
Nobody popped their hoods.
No. And over here, they're like, yeah, I'm running this, this, that, and the other. You know.
Meanwhile,
oh,
he's
you
in
know.
Your class.
Yeah, we're in the same class together. And he's like, hey, look, you know, what kind of camber are you running? You know, maybe try to add a little camber. Maybe take a little bit of camber out. Is your car oversteering? Is your car understeering? Like, everyone's here to help. You know, and we all want to enjoy the day, and we want competition. We don't want it single-sided.
Yeah, not for sure.
You know?
Raul, what would be the number one tip?
I think being stupid question is a bad question or some shit like that?
No question is a stupid question. Right, that's the thing is a stupid question.
Just ask questions and, like, we're open books, man. Like, at the end of the day, you ask us. People hit me up on Instagram.
Yeah.
What are you running? What are you doing?
Yeah.
I'm like, yo, this is it's simple. It's a simple setup, and it works, you know? Keep it simple, stupid. It's like KIS. There's a Navy.
Keep it simple, KISS.
Yeah. Keep it.
Keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. Exactly. So, at the end of the day, just bring your mom's Camry, bring your mom's Corolla, like, and just have fun. And then
take the Beamer out of the driveway.
Right. That's what else?
It doesn't take a lot to get in there. And I think I speak for the three of us. Like, if anybody has questions, like, feel free to reach out. Like, I'm an open book. You know, people IG me all the time and they're just like, hey, you know, where do I find the registration for this? How do I find out what class I'm in? You know, what's it like for a beginner? And just shoot me a message. Like, I'll be more than happy to tell you what it is. You know,
nah,
we want
sure.
more people to come.
Yeah, it makes us faster. Everybody faster, you know?
That's cool. So thank you guys. I think we're going to wrap it up from here.
Sweet.
Appreciate you, Raul, Chris, Steven. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely, man. This was awesome.
How can people find you on social media? What's your Instagram?
Fujimura on Instagram. Yeah, I just put all car stuff. Like, that's it. Chris?
Yeah, I've got IG. It's the easiest way to reach me. It's like EK4 4. Chris. That's it. You know, feel free to shoot me a DM or question, comment, like, follow, whatever. If not, it's okay.
Yeah. IG as well. IG is Steven_IV. I'm open book as well. Like, come see me at Grid Life, which is probably the biggest event of the year. Grid Life at Lime Rock. And yeah, we'll answer or help you with any way we can.
Let's get some YouTubers out there, man. I want to see some YouTubers.
I want to see Frankie out at the racetrack. Yeah, I want to see Brian out at the racetrack.
Brian, hey. Frankie.
Frankie before Brian, I'll tell you that.
Oh, yeah. Shit. Oh, exactly. There we go.
Brian, you're slacking my brother out. Yeah. I'll be on the track before he does.
Dude, let's awesome. Make it happen.
Hell yeah.
Well, once again, thank you guys for coming out. Did you guys check out the show?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely, these cars are
a lot
awesome.
Of nice cars this over here.
Very nice
I know
cars.
There's only like 2 days left, but by the time people hear this, the show will be over anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
No, but that, it gives them an incentive to come next year.
Yeah. And shout out
heard,
to
we're coming back.
R2X.
Yes.
Right? Shout R2X, out to Vin.
Calvin.
Shout out to Prime. Crown Auto. Crown yeah. Auto has
shout out
actually
to, shout out to all those guys.
Yeah.
And if you love this podcast, make sure you like, subscribe, you follow.
Hell yeah.
On all social media, on Spotify, on everything else.
Yes.
And we'll see you again.
Peace, y'all.
Thanks.